Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the one we've all been waiting for. It's good night, freaking Irene!
Let's get ready to rumble!
Time! And those had enough people, the fire truck out!
Ladies and gentlemen, today our special guest is Michael Corley, American Muay Thai fighter, gym owner, author, and the president of the United States Muay Thai Federation. Let's go.
Let's get right into it. Like, we like to start out kind of, learn more about you, where your martial art journey started.
I started doing amateur boxing, and then, probably like my fourth amateur boxing match, I met Eve Edwards from the, used to fight in the UFC, and he had a gym that was real close to me. I was driving pretty far to go to the amateur boxing, and I just started going to his gym. I didn't know particularly what I was wanting to do. There was boxing, there was MMA, there was everything, and I took a liking to the Muay Thai part of it, all of it, and I knew that there was kickboxing and Muay Thai, but I didn't know the difference at the time. I didn't know hardly anything. And then he told me to go do a smoker or sparring night at Saxon Janjira's in Dallas. And from there, I was like, kind of got an eye of what Muay Thai really was. From there, he kind of gave me the blessing to go and see him every now and then, and kind of, I just went full on Muay Thai really at that point. But that's how I got started early on. And then I went, I competed a little bit, and then I got to go to Thailand. I was on the USA team for the IFMA World Championships. And then afterwards they said, hey, do you, anybody who's on the team that wants to go to Thailand, we'll discount you, So I went and I did just a 30-day visit. And then right after that, I was like, I got to go full on in this. So I went back home and just kept saving and working to get back to Thailand. So,
yeah, that's what everybody that goes over, I think that's unfortunately the rest of our lives. Work and save and go back. Did you have an interest when you were younger, like before you got into boxing? Like, where did that start?
I just watched my dad's friend in the My dad was a police officer, and one of his friends in the police force was a guy from New York that used to be a professional boxer, Ed Hattrick, and he used to have the fights over at his house. And I always liked watching the fights. There was no, where I grew up, there was no boxing gyms. There wasn't anything like that around. And then he just kind of said one day, what do you think about going to check out a boxing gym? I was like, yeah, show me the way. And, I went there, and like literally within the first week, I quit basketball and baseball in high school, and said, I want to do this full on.
You get in trouble when you punch people in basketball, right?
Yeah.
So you went over, you got into Muay Thai. How did you end up on the U.S. team? Like, how does that whole process go? Because a lot of people get into Muay Thai, and they think that they have to have smokers, or they have to have, amateur fights and this and that, and they don't really understand what that is.
Yeah, where I grew up, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for Muay Thai other than smokers. So I was in Texas, and our commission, the Texas Department of Licensing Regulations, is really bad, where we're one of the only states that doesn't allow a third-party amateur associations to come in. So, for instance, like the USMTA, the IKF, WKA, they're not permitted to come and do like an amateur rule set like fights in Texas. It's either full on or not. So when we were growing up, there wasn't many opportunities at all. So it was a lot of stuff with smokers and anything. I was fighting, I did like sand shower smokers, I do a Muay Thai smoker. It'd be like some janky MMA striking smoker.
Yeah.
Then you mix in some amateur boxing. It was rough, and you would drive all over to try and do that. That was the the beginning of that. Then there was someone that was doing a, these talent search type things for the, you know, I guess he was like a Texas representative of the team at the time. And we did like, they would do like sparring sessions and they would send them in. So it was like, I mean, this is why I'm now, as the president of USA Muay Thai, I'm trying so hard to like get experience and better experience for youth and adults, because it's like, depending on where you live, it's so hard to get experience in Muay Thai in America.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, definitely.
You know, having youth events like the Youth Development League and different things is where I'm like targeted now, because if we go like how I do go, then we have no shot. You know, you get pretty far, but you won't make it to the top if you're starting your career off at, you know, you're, you know, 18 years old, or most people out of college, and you're way behind.
Yeah, we were just like, we were just talking to Savas, and he was telling us at like 6 he started.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not even a Thai, so that's like how the Thais start. But he was like, yeah, I started like 6, got into Muay Thai, and 14 I was in Thailand and fighting at Lumpini at 16. I'm like, oh Jesus. Like that's the Thai story, you know, that you don't see a lot of foreigners get, you know, that type of opportunity, or take that type of opportunity, you know. We in America, we got to finish school and do all those other things first. So it's like, you know, some other places just, you know, they do things different, especially like Thailand. I mean, we have the kids that, like you see in the gym, you know, they're 6-7 years old and training all day. And, you know, those are the ones that are becoming the champions. And it's different, definitely, obviously, over here. And then we don't let our kids hit each other anymore. So, So you got on the U.S. team. Is that how you got? You said you got to Thailand the first time.
Yeah, well, I think the champion. Yeah, the first one was in the World Championships was in Korea, and then right when I got back, so getting that international exposure, like, kind of showed me that I'm not at that level yet. So I wanted to get at that level. So when I got back home, and I had that opportunity to get like a little discount at the Fairtex Bang Pli camp, I was like, I'm going. So I had a little money saved, worked hard for a little bit too, and then I went over there. Right when I came back, I was like, I was addicted, but there was nothing in it. It's like kind of like you go see the best of Muay Thai and you come back home and it's like, man, this sucks. So yeah. It's like, then I went like almost a year of not fighting, not anything, and I took like a last minute fight. This is like in the book in Canada, and I took on like at the time one of the better amateurs in North America. I won, so then I came back to the U.S. team again. They were fighting in Bangkok that year, 2009. And while I was there training, the manager at Fairtex Bang Pli was he said that he had like a month left of work and he was not going to be continuing on as a manager. And I was like, who's next? Who's the He's like, well, no one. We haven't announced the job yet. I'm like, I'm right here. This is it. Yeah, this is my resume. I'll take the position, and I got the position. So I got the right after the World Championships. I went home back to Houston, got all my stuff, sold a bunch of stuff, and came back to Thailand. And then I worked as the manager at Fairtex for about a year and a half. And then through that, I got to compete a lot. And kind of experience everything.
How old were you when you went over there to and ended up being the manager over there?
I think I was, let's see, that was 2009. Hold on, let me do some math here. It's 2021. That was 2000. It was like December of 2009 to like April or May of 2011. So let's see, I guess I was 26, 25, oh, okay. 26. Yeah. Okay.
Not super young or anything. I was just saying, if they put like an 18-year-old in charge of the place, I'm like, damn.
I had graduated college and I got a degree in sport management, but it had nothing to do with running a camp in Thailand. There's no, I don't think there's any experience you can have that'll help you with that. So,
so was the person you were replacing at Fairtex, was he also a foreigner?
Yeah, he was a. He had dual citizenship as a Thai and American, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you went into that, did you know any Thai or like how?
No. Just like Muay Thai, you know, just.
Yeah.
But I had two assistants that spoke good English, but you know, sometimes like it would be sometimes I tell the trainer something and they weren't having it, and then I would just they act like they didn't understand, and I'd be like, okay, I'd have to go get the So I had a I thought, because like I liked Muay Thai on the level, like I went to the fights a lot with their, you know, a lot of their kids. I went to the stadium a lot, that they would take a liking to me, but they didn't like
yeah.
They didn't, you know, they did, but like whenever I had to like hand out something from the boss, like saying, hey, we need to do this, we do that, I was the bad guy. So, you know, sometimes they were not happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times I've heard it. Everyone says, well, you're never going to be a Thai. So, you know, no matter what we do, we're never going to be Thai. And so, how, like, what was your duties doing that, running, like, the gym?
Mostly, like, the liaison for the foreigners, you know, and I would do the booking. When I came in there, all their stuff was kind of messed up, like their websites. We had a bunch of different websites from previous people that tried to start up websites. There wasn't like, everything wasn't funneling into the right one. And one would go to an email that they didn't have access to anymore. One was going here, one was going there. And so I just kind of organized that to my best. And then I basically, yeah, just did all the bookings. Then when people were there, you would, you know, you have some people that are, it's real easy to work with. And you had some people that are very scared, and you have to, like, you know, take them through the ropes of how, well, this is training, so this is the morning training, this is the afternoon training, here's where we're gonna go eat after you're done. And you know, if you want to go watch some fights tonight, oh yeah, okay, cool. So some of the stuff was like, you know, almost babysitting, and then some of them it was like, you know, babysitting the crazy people. So some people came over there, they said they were doing Muay Thai, but they were like on another
mission. They were doing Soy Cowboy.
Yeah, they were doing some. I mean, there was a couple of people that got, like, they did 30-day, you know, like a 30-day trip, and I saw them maybe four times.
Oh, yeah.
They got lost in the city. And
they didn't get lost. They were between Pat Pong, Soy Cowboy, and the plaza. So, yeah, that's, I see, I mean, we saw that a lot, and it happens a lot in Phuket too. You know, with being such a lot of foreigners going, you know, on the Soy there with Tiger and everything. And then you're like, yeah, they're here to train. And then you see them. No, they've trained once this week, you know, where have they been? Oh, they were down in you know, Patong every night. It's like, all right, well, if that was your agenda, then you're accomplishing something.
Yeah.
So you were starting to get into fighting, and then you got the job at Fairtex. And how, was there a conflict there? Like, I mean, obviously your focus had to switch.
They basically said that I could train in the afternoons. Because I basically would, in the mornings would be a lot of times somebody new would come in the evening, the night before. So in the mornings I would, morning was most important. Make sure all the trainers report in the morning, because some of them don't report in the morning. Some of them may have had a rough night. I may have to direct them back to their room. So, and then, when the new students would come, they had some of them back home. They had an idea of, you know, what goes on. Some of them, like, to my surprise, some people came, it was their first time doing Muay Thai. So,
oh, wow.
They had no clue what was going on. They had no clue how to wrap their hands. They had no idea how the training format worked. So that would be important in the morning, that I was always with that. I'd be pretty occupied with that a lot. And then I would just, I would do my desk work, working on like the, you know, marketing stuff, all kinds of different things, doing the bookings and emails. And then the afternoon, they'd let me train.
Gotcha. And then while you're just training in the afternoon, are you still going to start pursuing fights and things like
that? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I started doing some fights. And when I was doing the fights, I think Mr. Phillip, Mr. Wong, the big boss of Fairtex, I think he thought I was just kind of like doing them for fun. And I had this thing that I wanted to see how far I could go and fight the, you know, tough fights, fight this. And I think right after my third or fourth fight, when I fought in Lumpini, he was like, he was just like, no. he's like, the Thai you fought, he doesn't even fight in the stadiums anymore. And you outweighed him. I'm like, well, he's got a lot of experience. And he's just like, blah.
I met him. He seemed really nice.
He is nice. He's nice. But when you talk about fighting, he's serious about.
Oh, yeah.
See him in training when he's on. He yells. And but it's good. I like all that stuff. It's just, you know, in the, you know, I think it's either all in or nothing. And then if you don't make it, why do you keep going after it? I think is what. You know, he's like, you don't have it, so why do you keep fighting?
They have Empatia with the Fairtex there. They have his little. He has like a line judge from
from like a
tennis courts, and a megaphone, and he's just yelling at everybody when training's going on.
That's awesome.
It is pretty cool. It's like very hands on, but like you see that at a lot of like camps that have their fighters like at Pet and D and things like that. It's like that main guy is fully invested. I mean, financially, that's his product. So they're like all over those guys. So you got to fight at Lumpini, which is again.
Yeah, the old Lumpini. Yeah, it was really cool. That was
at the oldest stadium.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that was a dream come true. I could have just stopped fighting right then and there after.
So obviously the old stadium's not around. I've only been to the new one. Like how, like describe going into a historic place like that to fight, to go watch the fights.
Yeah. So when the U.S. team came in 2009, before, you know, the tournament start, we all were meeting up together and training. And then one night we all went to, Lumpini. I had gone in 2008, the year before, when I saw Sanchai fight at the old stadium. It was really eye-opening and crazy, and just the sounds of the roaring of the crowd, the gamblers, and then it was like literally a metal roof, like a tin roof, and the rafters, people were packed in, you know, so tight, and I don't know, it's like an energy unmatched, you know, I've never seen anything like that. And when I went over the ropes into the ring, I was just like, I don't know, I was like, felt something. I was like, oh my God, I'm here. And I fought on so you used to have two shows on Saturday, a Saturday afternoon show and a Saturday evening show. The afternoon show maybe had 200 people in there. And the Saturday night show would be the busier one. So like the Saturday afternoon would be like for the younger fighters and the up and comers, and maybe throw in a foreigner or two every now and then.
Yeah.
And so that was my experience. Even though there was like 200 people there, I was still like pumped just to be in there. And do the, you know, I've seen all these videos, you know, of all these like heroes, you know, fighting in that same arena and in that same ring. It's pretty awesome.
yeah. Kurt and I, my first like stadium in Thailand was Raja, and man, like it's the same thing. I tell everybody, I'm like, you can't even understand the energy of the gamblers and you know the roar of the crowd. And there's not typically like they're not rooting for one fighter or the other. Like there's just any good strike, they're just going nuts, and it's like wild. And yes, that's just, I mean, to get to fight there has got to be totally different.
Yeah.
So after that, so where are you going, like career wise, Mr. Wong tells me you don't have it. So hey, what do you do after that?
He kind of got that out after that fight, and because he had helped arrange that fight. Because at the time he was still a promoter at Lumpini. He doesn't promote anymore at that. And after that, he didn't really assist with any fights, which I don't blame him. It's fine. But I just started kind of doing my own thing getting fight. I was just trying to get as much experience as I could. So the person that was doing my job in Pattaya, Ted, he at the time he was he'd helped me get some fights, and then just started networking and meeting people in Thailand from the fight, different fights, and just tried to accumulate some experience. I got to fight in some cool things. I got to fight on TV a couple of times in like 2 8-man tournaments, like a WMC Super 8, and then the coolest one was the Toyota Cup, Toyota Muay Thai Marathon. So that was a big one. That was actually when you said you guys had Kevin Ross on recently. Mm-hmm. When I was working at Fairtex, I'd always, you know, we'd always watch fights on TV, and I was in the Fairtex lobby, and when I saw Kevin Ross fight in the Toyota Cup, I'm like, man, look at that, it's freaking American Kevin Ross, you know. At the time, he's probably the number one, I'd say, just pound for pound in America, and the biggest name. And then he was fighting the Toyota Cup, and I was like, man, I got to get to the Toyota Cup. I got to.
Yeah. Sava said the same thing. Sava said like that tournament was like really cool.
Yeah.
He did that.
It's unique. You get in there and they get like 8 guys in the ring. They draw from a hat who you're gonna fight, and just all goes down right there.
Some gladiator stuff.
Yeah. So, Michael, one of the things I kind of wanted to ask you, going throughout your book, it's kind of like a reoccurring theme, like not having the proper like training, or you know what I'm saying? Like
Injuries and whatnot.
Yeah, injuries, and then like trainers swapping out, and then you having to kind of like seek out trainers just so that you could fight at some of these bigger tournaments. And I thought that was really interesting, because that was kind of the same thing that I experienced. But whereas you fought, I was like, man, I don't have the confidence to do this, because, you know, it's like there's not enough structure. So I kind of want to pick your brain a little bit. Like, how did you develop that confidence, even though you knew that your preparation wasn't, you know, like as good as it could have been?
Yeah, so I just love fighting. I wanted to fight. I wanted to compete. And I always knew that if I was in shape, I would be, that's good. But the confidence is just something I'd have, but I'd like to say with what you said is that it's something about camps, is that where I was, they had taken basically Cal, Fairtex, Yotsenkai, who's the other one? Nora Paul. They took all of the big fighters, Detwa Jong, all the big name fighters from Fairtex Bang Phli. They took them to Pattaya, and so they just basically relied on its history that for people to come there. Well, people don't care about history anymore. They don't care about, you know, the legends. So we didn't have any fighters there, and it seemed like it kind of took the lifeblood out of a lot of the trainers, where they're not in the big action anymore. So why am I going to train this this guy from Texas? But anyway, that, you know, it was just, I think when you go to Thailand, you got to find a camp that has active people in the stadiums, because then I think it creates a better gym energy. You know, there's the other trainers. There's going to be a big boss overlooking, because these are big money fights. You're going to see good training when there's active stadium fighters in there. Ours was kind of not at that point. So I just tried to get the best out of it I could. And then eventually in the book, I go to another gym, just, and I was like, whoa, this is the training. This is what I need to be doing every day. And imagine me fighting people doing this twice a day, and while I'm over here arguing with trainers and so like, and just running on a treadmill and shadow boxing ain't gonna get it.
I think especially for, like you mentioned earlier, like in the United States, especially depending on where you live, like I'm here in Reno, we don't have like a super big Muay Thai or like Muay Thai community, whereas, you know, like California does. What kind of advice would you give to, you know, some of the fighters that are coming up in an area where, you know, you don't have too much Muay Thai going on? Like you said, like most of the time, like here, if you want to get some sparring in, you got to like mix it in with some MMA fighters, in which, you know, it's not exactly the same.
Unfortunately, people don't like to hear this, is that you got to make some sacrifices. And if you really want to make it, Muay Thai is like, you know, I hate to say it, but some people that make it, if you look at some of these contracts and people fighting in America, you know, I don't get me wrong, I'm not taking any stab at any promotions and stuff, but people think that, you know, you're a North American champion or something like that, you're fighting for less than $5,000. Yeah. And this is not the sport that if you're doing it for money, this isn't it. So let's get that first out of the way. There's no money in this unless you're upper echelon stadium fighter in Thailand. So in order for you to make anything of it, get the experience, you're going to have to sacrifice. You're going to have to adjust. You're going to have to move. If, you know, I would say you'd have to go to Thailand to get that experience. You'd have to go to an area, maybe in SoCal or Northern California, where they have a region where they're having active fight shows, New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, all that, you know, have little communities that are actually putting on fights. So if you're in a place that's not getting that, unfortunately, I think you're going to peak out at some point. You know, there's a, you'll be really good in the national scene, but if you want to be international, you got to take the next step.
And then I guess my next question is, you know, I've been to quite a few gyms over there in Thailand, and I've been to like where I was the only foreigner there. I've been to other gyms where it's, you know, it's like all foreigners. Like if you were going to send somebody over there and, you know, it was like their first time going over to Thailand, they were trying to get fights. Like, do you have any recommendations as far as like gyms go?
Yeah, it just depends on how they're like, what are their goals are. If they're like just doing a one-off, if they're looking to like be a resident, you know, somewhere. I also like to send my students to Rob Cox's gym in Pattamtani, that it's called a Kiat Pong Tip, because it's outside of the city a little bit, so they're not going to be distracted too much. That's a big one, because I've sent students over before and they got distracted.
I think that's like something good to bring up, because I think like a lot of times when people go over there, they don't realize like how big the nightlife is over there, or how like you could get drawn into it. Like some people just thinking they're gonna go over there for pure Muay Thai, and then they wind up getting sidetracked. Like, I almost feel like, yes, to send somebody over there, you got to warn them first. Like, hey, you got to look out for this, look out for that, stick to your training.
You'll always be, you know, it's very friendly over there. You know, somebody might have you come over to the, you know, the food stand, and they open up a Leo beer and say, hey, come on. I'm like, hey. Then all of a sudden, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then miss training tomorrow morning. It's big. I sent, you know, I try to send my fighter somewhere away. I had a guy that helped me do my he helped me book a lot of fights when I lived in Thailand, and he opened up a gym in northern Thailand, in Chiang Mai, and I try to keep everybody away from the distractions, build their experience, you know, get some fights at the, that's another thing, is a lot of people want to jump right into the big stuff in Thailand. They don't want to go because they want to be on social media with a cool poster and all stuff. What they need to do is go and fight in some festival fights, you know, they need to go and get as much experience as they can, not just try and go right into the, you know, the big stuff. It ends up not working out really well. So that's where I would recommend you know, anything in the city that's got, it also depends on what their goal is with, you know, clinch. If they want to learn the clinching and knee fighting, I would send them, you know, to FA group. If they want to learn, you know, this and that, I send them to another, you know.
Yeah.
So the main thing is sending them to a place that has active competitors. Like I said, that I think that's the, and not just active at the local tourist stadiums. I'm talking about in the Bangkok stadiums, because the training is on a different level. When there's money, big money at stake, you'll see everyone's attitude change in the training.
I mean, even with that, like, yeah, the attitude changes, and you'll see it when, like, the big boss comes in and everybody straightens up. But that's a huge difference. And, I mean, you both own gyms, so you kind of see how we train here. And Michael, like, I don't know how your gym goes, but when we were, like, at Vanderlei's and things like that, sparring was like, all right, we're going to spar. It's fight time. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Like, and then you go over to Thailand and it's like, oh, we're going to spar. And it's almost like working hard, but playing tag, you know, training safely. And that's the thing that people don't really get is, well, you're training, like when you're going to these gyms, like you're talking about, with, you know, the million baht fighters, the guy that has to fight next week, that you're, yes, you're getting good work, but you're also training safe. And in the States, we kind of throw that out a lot. It's like, I got to win. I'm going to win sparring.
Yeah. And... you'd be surprised how many people I tell them to go hit the bag. Like when we're doing like sparring, like go. Yeah. Yeah. We don't, I try to keep a pretty good culture with that in my gym. There are times, but you got to pay your dues to get to that day where you do like a harder sparring, or I call it like a fight practice, where we only do it like once a week, or maybe sometimes once every 2 weeks of more of a harder style. But that, you know, someone told me, I don't know the, it makes kind of sense, but they were saying that when the Dutch were coming up and trying to compete with the Thais and stuff, they said they did a lot of these hard conditioning, you know, the drills where they're kicking and, you know, eating a lot of the stuff, is to condition their body because of the experience. You know, they don't have the experience as the Thais and hardening the body through all the fighting as a youth. So if they're constantly drilling hard like that on the body, you know, where they do like the drills, they're kicking each other's legs, the body, and kicking on the arms, that it's going to harden their body up, which does make sense to try and keep up, you know, keep a level playing field. Because if you have a guy that's fought 100 times, doesn't matter his record, he's been kicked and punched, and his body's been broke down and regrouped, and it's hard. You know, you ever clinch with some of these guys, you're just like, oh man, this is like,
yeah.
You kick them and, you know, you landed the kick, but it still hurts.
Yeah, right, exactly. Kurt and I were just talking about that because, you know, did you happen to watch the fights this weekend?
Yeah.
And everybody's talking about the calf kick.
Yeah.
and then you see the whole Muay Thai community on social media like, that doesn't fucking work.
It's just the way they stand. Like, if you just angle the foot out just a tiny bit, I feel like that calf kick wouldn't land so much in MMA. But everybody kind of just stands like in a boxing stance, I feel. But yeah, because you don't really see that calf kick too much in Muay Thai. You know what I mean? Like, not unless somebody's like checking and they come around it, but.
I've seen it every now and then, but it's not like a, you know, when someone blocks a low kick like that, it hurts. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It looks like they're kicking with their foot a lot of times too. It's like, man, just if somebody would check that, I feel like they'd break their foot.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you want to hear something. I'll tell you. I think a lot of the MMA guys, they spar with only MMA guys, and they're doing, you know, sparring with takedowns and doing a lot of different things. But a lot of guys with their striking these days, they're doing more pad work than they are actual drilling. Where in class, you do experience the looks of different people. You know, you got a tall guy in class, you got a small guy in class, you got a fast guy in class, you got all these different people in a class giving you all these different looks. And a lot of the professional, you know, MMA fighters, they don't want to take class no more, or they say they don't have time to take class, or the other thing is the ego. I'm a professional UFC fighter, I don't need to be in a class with these, you know,
but moms and yeah.
This is the thing I think would definitely help with, you know, not just calf kicks, but low kicks in general. You see a lot of people get ripped up with low kicks as well. I just don't think they're getting the looks with strikers, you know, people that are, that's all they do is striking. You got to get those looks. You got to get the reps from different eyes, not the same two people you spar with every day, not just doing pad work. So yeah, that's, I know that's went off the, but that's my philosophy on why.
It makes sense. It makes 100% sense.
Yeah, I mean, and we saw that. Like, when we were at Vandalay's, to fight, amateur or professional, you had to be in classes. Like, to be on the fight team, even professional fighters, they all did classes with us. Whereas you do see that, though, at, like, other gyms, it's like once they reach that, it's kind of like in jiu-jitsu. Once you reach your purple belt, you weren't even, we don't do the warm-up anymore, you know, and then it just escalates from there. So it's like, yeah, what you're saying, you know, if you have an elite-level MMA fighter, he's going to skip Muay Thai practice and hit pads with his trainer, or, you know, something.
I got
like
a couple that come to my gym, and I tell, they want to do pads all the time. I tell them to take class. They're going to get more out of it from that. Then we'll once I see that they do class, then I'll hold pads for them, because then I know that their mind is right. They're open to learn rather than just coming to hit pads, because the days of holding pads a couple times a week for someone, that's not going to get you better, man.
No, I remember I was in a gym, a small gym in Pattaya. I was like, because I'll just wander around and find gyms. I was talking to the owner, and he was telling me about a fighter that came from, I think he said he came from America, that was an MMA fighter that wanted to learn Muay Thai. And so they came in, and they had him set up. They had a room and everything, and he comes in to train. And so the trainer's like, okay, go jump rope. He's like, nah, I don't jump rope. And he's like, what? And he goes, well, we have a treadmill. Go run on the treadmill for 15 minutes. And the guy's like, I'm not running before class or before training. And the trainer's like, what do you do? Like, and then you're not listening to me. He's like, this isn't going to work. You know, he's like, and then, the guy comes all the way there. But still, like, you get that ego. And we have that thing now that, like, MMA is the ultimate blend. But I feel like MMA takes, like, the smallest portion of each. Like, you can't be just an elite level one or the other. You can't just be, you know, the baddest jiu-jitsu player or the baddest Muay Thai fighter, and it doesn't work. So, like, if you see what works in MMA now, it's, like, very little of each. And then they kind of just fill in the gaps, you know?
Yeah. Like,
how many submissions do you really see in
I just saw a chart the other day where it's like a rear naked choke, armbar, guillotine, all the stuff that you first learn, and it's the fundamentals. So it's important to learn those fundamentals.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Like, when I would teach, I never taught combos over four or five strikes, you know, like when you're teaching a class in Muay Thai. It's like, I'm not trying to teach you how to do a dance. I want you to learn how to use these things. And if I'm teaching you like a 20 strike combination, at some point it's just not going to work. So, you know, like, learn how to throw these punches, learn how to, you know, see somebody else, like you said, in class, even though you're just holding the pad or catching the strike, you at least see where things are coming from. It's a different thing. And you're going to, again, you're seeing it from a beginner to like a stay at home mom wants to get in shape. And then you're like, oh, I got to work with her. And that does kind of show you, like, the character of people, too, you know? Like, you know, are you a pro fighter that would train with somebody like that? Or are you a pro fighter only trains with pro fighters, you know?
I'll separate the class, but, yeah, it's still the same. You know, they everybody got to be humble. If the story you said about the guy not wanting to do the stuff, when people would come and I would tell them how it worked, I would say training starts at 7, they run at 6 a.m. Yeah. The ones that ran at 6 a.m., the trainers knew took a little more serious, so they would get better pad rounds, they would get the better trainers. Whereas the ones that didn't want to get up and run, didn't want to do the jump rope before the training, they would get the trainers that just yell away and like Chinese whiskey.
They make you feel like you're the baddest man on the planet, but you haven't done anything. And then I don't remember who it was, but somebody was telling us that they had to go to a gym a bunch of times before like a pad holder would even like work with them. You know, be training for a while before anybody would like work with them, because you know, a pad holder that trains champions, that trains high level stadium fighters, again, they know their value too. So it's like, if you're not taking it serious, why the hell are they going to invest in you? Yeah. You know, and you know the trainers, they get their cut of the pay too. So, yeah. You know, if you're bullshitting, they're kind of like, well, whatever. So how is your career progressing? Obviously, like in your book, you've dealt with many injuries from
I'm still hurting. I'm long done with that. I've had a gym now for a while, and I've had my students surpass me. I've had through all the connections I had in Thailand, I had one of my top students, Rebecca Irwin. She's fought on everything in Thailand, the big shows in Thailand, and she just turned 20. She's probably had close to 20 fights in Thailand already.
That's awesome.
So she's won the IFMA World Championships 3 times.
Oh, wow.
She won a Muay Ying Association World title 2 years ago in Thailand. She's done a lot. She's signed to Glory now just because there's not a lot of opportunity in the U.S. So she's 3-0 there. So we're just trying to there's been like a pause, obviously, with the COVID. So we don't know what we've been training. She used to do jiu-jitsu when she was a kid. So unfortunately, I'm saying now we're doing a little more of the MMA training. And then I have a lot of students have won throughout North America in open class. Amateurs, I have a couple other pros. Jacob Rodriguez, he fought in Glory. He's just won the triumphant Muay Thai cruiserweight title. So my stuff is like putting like that competitive stuff that I had as a fighter, I put it into my athletes, and I'm a little hard because I want them to do better than me. And if I see that they're not doing what I did or more, then I know they're not going to make it, because I fought for some big things, but I didn't make it. So if they're not doing what I did or more, then there's no way they're going to make it. So
yeah,
if that makes sense.
So you got to fight at Lumpini, but what about some of the smaller shows like up north and Isan and things like that? Like how would you describe those? Like the atmosphere and going into something like that.
I don't know what is that. The fight at Jungsinan's Village, like is in my book. That is like the craziest. It's just wild. It was like it's like a shack covering over a ring. And there was maybe a few seats for some older people, but the rest was just, they got those nets where they just rope off the area with the nets, the green nets. And then they have like the you know, they got the food stands and got the alcohol right there. Just everybody yelling. And it was just, that was wild. That was in Chaiapum. I don't think I mean, I've been to festival fights, all that stuff, but that one right there was kind of just like a thrown together ring, like right there in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. And it was pretty cool. When I worked at Fairtex, here's a crazy one. When I worked at Fairtex, the trainers sometimes would take fights just to get extra money, and they didn't even train. They literally just held pads, and sometimes they just show up and fight. And one time they were like, a fight tonight. I was like, where? They're like, Jala K. I'm like, Jala, the crocodile? I'm like, yeah. I was like, the crocodile farm? So like when, like at the crocodile farm, they used to have like outside the entrance where all the big parking lot was, they used to put a ring out there, and it would kind of be like a festival style fight. And we go there and I don't see the ring in there. And I'm like, what the heck? So like we go inside it's a zoo basically, but there's like this crocodile farm thing in there where they got like a rink, like a skating rink almost, like with the arena circled around it. And there's, you know, they do the show where those guys with the red outfits doing the stuff with the crocodiles. And I am not lying. They put a ring in the crocodile pit. I have a photo. I'll have to share it to you guys. And so they had like the trainers, the crocodile trainers kind of have them, the crocodiles over to the side. And there was like a, there was like referees, and the judges were on like a, like a, like a stool up to the ring, like on an elevated stool. I was like, what if someone fell out of the ring? But it was
don't move the crocodiles.
We'll just, that was one of the craziest things. And they were like, sometimes the trainers, they would let me help corner, because I just like, I wanted to do it as an experience, just to, like, and they're like, boss, come corner. I'm like, oh,
yeah. Is it the one where I'm going to get eaten? I don't want to go there.
Yeah, it's I tell that story sometimes and people don't believe it, but I have a photo of it. It was pretty crazy.
The stuff I've seen there, I believe it. And I've been to that like one of those shows, and it's such a horrible thing that when you're there, you're just kind of like, "What the hell am I watching?"
So I mean, I've done a lot of different stuff in Thailand. I've had to fight in, like, you know, Cambodia. I did a nice show in Hong Kong. Different stuff, Europe, South America. But if I could go back and do it all again, the day that I left Thailand is when, like, everything kind of started going up and down, and mostly going more down. I just tell people, just spend as much time as you can there. If you're under 175 pounds, just go to Thailand and stay there as long as you can.
Yeah. That's it. So when you... I'm trying to. Was it an injury that brought you back?
No, my I had got done with Fairtex, and then I'm trying to think of what my work visa. I don't know what my visa status was. I'm trying to think, and I think it was coming to an end sometime soon. And after the Toyota Cup, that whole thing with the trainers, you know, I really didn't have any of the trainers that wanted to help me with that. I just, I don't know. I think I needed a break, not so much from the fighting at that time, but the, one of the things, I was just kind of burned out a little bit of the whole living in the camp and dealing with the drama and dealing with all of the, you know, it's just so many things. Like, a trainer's wife works at the factory. She did this, and because they had the Fairtex factory right next door to the gym. So there was a ton of employees there, and there was, just imagine the drama of everyone living on site. So a lot of the trainers lived on site, their families lived on site, and kind of policing that and keeping everything cool while dealing with, you know, the occasional crazy foreigner that'd come over there and throw beer bottles up in the air, or, you know, stumble into their room and break a window, or, you know, I was just kind of burned out, I guess, at that time. I needed to go back home, but if I could do it all again, I probably shouldn't have gone home.
So what happens, you know, yeah, I mean, obviously not too much detail because it's in your book, but the track once you go home, I know that every time I leave Thailand, it sucks. Like, just, you're leaving something, and I don't know.
I went big on eating for a little bit, and then I got, you just get into this groove where it's like you're constantly finding training, where there's not like a set thing. I'm sure some of the gyms in California and New York, they probably don't experience this, but like in Texas, you'd have to call and make sure, align your training all the time. Like, it wasn't just like set. We'd have like, you know, a good group on Fridays get together. But what am I doing throughout that week, you know?
Yeah.
I'm teaching someone how to hold pads, and that's just not going to get it. So eventually I got, you know, a good group to get together a couple times a week, but that's, again, that's just not going to get it. And then the consistent pad holding, didn't have that. The one thing that we have here in Houston is like world class boxing. So I got back into boxing when I came back to, America for a little bit. I did 3 pro boxing fights, and I felt like the culture in the boxing gym was similar to what I was getting in Thailand at a high level gym, you know? So they got like guys fighting for WBC boxing championships in the gym, guys fighting for WBA championships, people going and doing the runs together. It's kind of like Thailand, you know, but in boxing, and it was a good culture. And, you know, it's kind of like Thailand again. There was tons of guys that beat me up in there, just like the Thai camps, the real Thai camps. You got little kids that'll throw you on your butt and clinch, and they'll beat you up in sparring. I got into boxing for a little bit, and then I started training one of my good friends in MMA. But there was, I don't know how long it was a year or so. I finally got the bug again. When I was training him in Muay Thai, he was fighting a guy that I knew the fight was going to be all standing. So we just basically trained like Muay Thai. We did Muay Thai in the morning, Muay Thai in the evening for the whole camp. And he won. It was good. But it reawakened my Muay Thai. I was like, man, I got to get back to Muay Thai. So then after that, I got a fight opportunity to fight in a four-man tournament in Hong Kong. So I jumped on that. It was pretty cool.
Is that the one where you were with Cyrus?
No, that's before. That was in Suriname in South America. Yeah.
Yeah, we had Cyrus on a while back before he fought Dave again.
Oh yeah, I was cornering Cyrus for that. He's here in Houston. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's quiet, but man, if you go deep into his record, he's beaten a lot of big names. Mm-hmm. He doesn't talk about it. He's got a lot of accolades that I always tell him, like, man, you need to put up a website just telling everyone what you've done, man. It's crazy.
Well, we had him on, and you're talking to him, and he's just telling the story, same type of thing, and you're like, why don't more people know all this, you know?
Yeah.
But he's very interesting, and so you get through your boxing, and so you're reignited with Muay Thai, and where do you go?
I went basically that time I was only able to go about 10 days before a fight into Thailand. So I'd go there and just kind of tune up, get the weight cut, feel good, smash some pads a few days. I did all right in the Hong Kong tournament. Then I went back home, and it's just, I took some stupid fights. I opened a gym. So I'd been a year away from fighting in that Hong Kong tournament. I'd opened a gym, and then there was an opportunity for a King's tournament. They were going to tie it in with Thai fight over 2 days. I mean, 2 dates. And a lot of people knew me, and I knew a lot of people in Thailand, so they were reaching out to me about getting an American. So this is in the book. I reached out to a bunch of gym owners the coaches I know in America. I'm like, hey, this is an opportunity to fight in Thailand, King's tournament. Antoine Pinto's in the tournament, Sayok, all these people in there. All these people are like, well, how much is it? What is this? What is that? I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? Somebody is offering to pay for you to go to Thailand, fight in this type of event. Who cares? Go and fight. You know? And I probably went through 3 different names of top guys, and I said, anything less than that is not going to be worthy of it. They would be going over there to get sacrificed if I got anyone below this. And so I just said, you know what? I'll do it. I'll do it. And that was like, that's in my book, A Couple Mistakes. That's a whole chapter on being a gym owner and trying to take fights at a high level is just the dumbest thing you can do. I know some gym owners that do it and they make it work, very few, but a lot of them, they're getting stuff, you know, fights that they know they're going to win, fights they're going to get. You go and fight real people like Antoine Pinto after a year off of fighting and being a gym owner holding pads, you're going to get beat up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a heck of a break to just try and jump back into like top level.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had a couple, you know, I did Antoine Pinto, then I fought Marco Piquet in a rematch after that, and I was just like, what am I doing? Why? I'm a gym owner. I've got all these guys. I got like 6 people currently fighting. They were fighting on the, when I fought Marco, there was, I think, 4 or 5 of our guys from the gym with my partner. I mean, he helped me train them too, of course, but still, like, your mind is on a lot of things. You got all these guys fighting, and I just totally, I'm like, you know, I got to fight too. Oh shit.
Yeah.
And then that was that. After that, I was like, there's no way I need to be fighting anymore. And then, as you see in the book, I think it's like three years later, I got to do one more. I had to have hernia surgery. I remember when we took the kid, at that time I got elected U.S. president for the Muay Thai, and we took a kids group to Thailand, 22 kids and their parents, which is just,
oh, wow. That's crazy.
I could go on a whole podcast about that. And then, there, I saw these photos of me there with the team. I was like, man, I look like some blob, man. I look like no fighter. I look like a old, like a, I didn't want to be the Muay Thai president with, you know, no. So when I got back home, I was just like, I got to get back in shape. This is ridiculous. The hernia surgery, put on some weight. I had like a relationship, and I was like, this is the perfect time to get right back into it. So I trained hard and did one more fight, and that was it. I just wanted to get in shape one more time, fight one more time, end my career in Thailand. I thought there's no better way to close the book on that. So now it's all. And then the coolest thing about it is I had all my students fighting on the undercard.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It was like a whole USA versus Thailand card on TV in Thailand. I was like, there's no better way to end the story there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, how did you get into more of to become the president? Like, how did that develop?
I was an athlete in 2008, 2009. Then 2010, they had the championships in Bangkok again. And when I was working at Fairtex, at the time, the USA president was not able to be there till like halfway in the tournament. So I had to like lead, manage the team in Thailand. I got exposure to this tournament now, like 3 years in a row. A few years later, they formed a board of sorts to like try and get more involvement, because it was kind of regionalized, like West Coast and East Coast only, and it needed representation everywhere. And from there, I just kind of kept suggesting stuff, trying to help. I put a couple of my own students in the USA team. And then in 2016, they kept putting teams together last minute, and they didn't were very successful. So I was getting really upset with that, and I was a coach in 2016 of the USA team in Sweden, and then in the Pan Ams in Peru. And at that point, I just kind of saw that things needed a big overhaul. So I the opportunity to run for president, I ran for president, got it unanimously. And from there, I was like, man, let's rebuild everything. Let's get all the big names of American Muay Thai together, and let's start getting our youth involved. Let's start getting everything, you know, create a culture and a community that people will stand behind. You know, what better platform than being the USA team, you know?
Yeah. It's
something to easily unify everybody and go to the biggest Muay Thai tournament in the world, you know? So that was that. So what I did is I just reached out to the best officials I know. I said, guys, we're starting we want to start educating officials. I feel like that's a terrible thing in the U.S. We have some high level fights, and you got guys that don't know anything about Muay Thai, don't know how to do anything with the clinch, nothing. So we started having officials. I brought in the best guys I know that are in the U.S. When it came to marketing and graphics, I brought in, you know, like Jeff DeHillo. I got all these guys I know are the best. And I brought them in, and I'm still looking. So anybody listening to this, if you want to help and volunteer, it's not a paid gig yet, but you just come in and you're doing a good thing for USA Muay Thai. And I just created stuff and trying to build it and bring in a good team together and get the right coaches. And that's basically what I've been doing for the last 4 years. Because of COVID, we have a election year next year. I'm sorry, this year it was supposed to be in. I've already done a 4-year term, so I'm gonna have we have elections at the end of this year here, 2020. So might run for one more term and hopefully can pass the torch to somebody.
You said you kind of got thrown into managing the team in Thailand.
Yeah.
Did you know the team before they got there? Or
yeah, I knew some of the coaches were returning from 2009. Some of the athletes were returning from 2009. And then, I was managing the camps. I was like, how am I supposed to manage the camp and then take them to the tournament? Yeah. It'll only be for a few days. I was like, well, that's a lot, you know? But, I knew a lot of the guys, and it was pretty cool. You know, I always saw that if you can get somebody international exposure at a young age, it'll change their life for either the good or the better. I always tell people when they fight at these things, it's like two ways to go from it. You can go up or you can go some people realize like, I don't think I have it. There's some people are like, they get the thing, they see it, and they're like, wow, I know what I can do to do that. I know I can do better. I know I can go. And so every person, I feel that if you look at a lot of the top Americans that are, fighting in Glory or fighting in, the Muay Thai promotions, a lot of them have a background in IFMA Muay Thai. They got their experience fighting internationally, like Janet Todd, Troy Jones, a lot of these, they got at least, eight. Troy probably has like six or something. Janet probably has over 15 fights of IFMA style fights, fighting in South America a couple times, Europe, fighting in Thailand multiple times for IFMA things. So it's invaluable. People always say like, people come out of pocket for that experience. But think about it, you go to college, and you pay for college, and you got to invest in yourself. You got to pay to go to Thailand. You got to pay to go to these tournaments, invest in your craft. It's education. It's experience that you're not going to get if you just sit at home, Yeah.
And I think the problem though, like what you're doing is great because the problem being like we were at Vanderlei's as MMA gym, Vanderlei Silva's gym. He's there all the time. We had a huge amateur and professional fight teams, and then jiu-jitsu started growing. Our Muay Thai was way bigger than the jiu-jitsu program for a long time. It's definitely a Brazilian style Muay Thai, but the classes were always big and we had some really good strikers. When the jiu-jitsu started growing, it was super easy for all of us to get experience competing. Literally, Naga, Grappler's Quest, you can go to Worlds, you could just go. And it was like, so easy. So for these kids that are coming up in these gyms that don't know, what is your advice to kind of get these kids to go in some sort of competing direction? If there's a kid in Wisconsin or Ohio or something that they're in this gym and there's five or six kids in a class, how are they going to seek out where to compete?
We have a thing with the USA Muay Thai that Patrick Rivera does called Youth Development League. And they have events that are starting to spring up everywhere. And then, I would have them contact their coach, have the coach maybe talk to him about, finding out who's a regional coordinator, who puts on events in that area. Because we have had those in like the Midwest. We had them on the West Coast, East Coast. We had them in Texas. And they're basically kind of like a thing where everybody kind of meets up in the morning. There's like a weigh-in, and then like a couple hours later, they're starting an event where it's they're wearing all the gear and they get a score sheet basically talking and showing them about Muay Thai attributes, balance, all these different things that a lot of these gyms may not understand about the Thai scoring. They're just going out there and swinging or throwing karate blitzes down the middle like, So we give them a score sheet, like an evaluation card of their performance, and then they just get experience that way. Other things is just like baseball. When I was younger, we had like a traveling baseball team. We had to pay for stuff. They got to go to all the tournaments that are available. Sometimes it may not be the most great place to go or experience, but you got to go and get the experience. You got to go and get as many bouts in as you can. You got to go to Iowa, Arizona, all the big tournaments, Florida, wherever there's a tournament, you should just try and go and get the experience for the youngsters. Adults, get as much experience as you can, but there's going to be a time where I think, you know, you got to make the sacrifice. You know, you got to go. It's not, to me, it's really the only way you're going to have a shot at making it big is to go and get that experience in Thailand or.
So I guess another thing I'll like, as far as like IFMA, right? Like if you wanted to be on the U.S. team, like what would be the roadmap or the path for an athlete to actually get on the U.S. team?
The experience, just getting as much experience as you can, going to the tournaments and cleaning up at the tournaments. If you're a professional, obviously just being active and being successful. We have a selection committee. People say, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Well, it's difficult. Where every state has a different athletic commission with different rules of Muay Thai. Some places are busy. Some places have nothing. So we just get all the best coaches, all the best people in media, all these things, and they are weighing everything. So we have like a we actually have to release a new one because basically how are you going to pick a team for 2020? I'm sorry, 2021 this year. I'm sorry, this year. 2020. I've got all these years mixed up because of the COVID basically wiped out a year of competition. So a lot of people haven't been active. So we have to, we have like a new thing that we're going to be releasing with a selection committee that weighs in experience. And basically we're going to put a top five of each division and those top five will get, you know, points based upon their activity. So basically you got to be active and getting experience and, you know, obviously winning. And most of these, it's regionalized. So most people know where they are. So I know who they are. I think you just got to go and get experience. You know, if you're going out there and you win two national tournaments in America, you're probably on the, you know, short list of being on the team. A professional going out there and he went 4-0 in the year on the team.
So like there's so many gyms now and then there's not a lot of knowledge of the path to take for even the gym owners. They say, oh yeah, I started a Muay Thai gym, which there's plenty of people do, but they don't know that there's a more avenues.
So we have a thing, we've done a couple, I think, but we're going to make it available to all of our members. Everyone that's a USMF gym, we're going to have this video. It's called an education course, where it's basically talking about the basics of Muay Thai. Like a lot of people, they don't even know how to, you know, win or why to remove the Hmong call. They don't know how to enter the ring. They don't know how a match starts or when a ref should break. So basically they're going to get like a brief thing on, you know, how the fight progresses, how a fight starts, very basic stuff. And it's an educational course. From there, then it branches into officials and refereeing, where it'll get more in depth into the scoring, which we already have those available. And I always tell people, I don't know why, but like, it doesn't matter if you don't want to be a referee or a judge. You need to take these courses so you know how to teach your classes, that you're teaching stuff that actually is going to win fights, whether or not, you know, instead of looking cool, you know, stuff that wins fights. So if you don't know how to win a fight, scoring or judging, then how are you going to teach a proper class? So that, I think that's very important. That's kind of the biggest one for me. Patrick Rivera, he has a thing where my thing is education. Through Muay Thai, his is education through business. Like he has a thing, I think it's called Muay Thai Business Academy or Muay Thai Business, something like that. And he's trying to help a lot of gym owners, you know, with basic stuff on, you know, customer relations softwares to use, different things that, like, because if you don't have a business, then you don't have Muay Thai. And then if you don't have education of what you're doing, you're not doing Muay Thai. So if you put those things together, I think that helps with the growth of USA Muay Thai, whereas, you know, you got a lot of guys that are like, well, we're we're a hardcore gym, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, great. I don't know any of your athletes. I don't know what, you know what I mean? Right. Like those guys are telling everybody that they're this and that. I don't know. I don't see them with successful athletes on the circuit. So they can go be hardcore somewhere else and we'll continue to educate and, you know, grow.
So is there a way for gyms to join?
Yeah.
Okay. How does that work?
They just go to usamuaytai.sport. And that's our new website. So the .sport we got because we recognized sporting body for Muay Thai now. So through the IOC's provisional recognition, hopefully this year it gets full recognition. They say it might be known at the Olympic Games this summer. So if we get full recognition, that'd be really great. You can join on there. There's education opportunities on there. Your gym registration helps support the USA teams. And, you know, those aren't cheap, the uniforms and all this stuff. And like I said, people are always like, why do people have to pay? Why do we have to do this? It's like, well, in a sport where, you know, world champions are making $5,000, $10,000, it's not a lot of money in the sport. But we're working on it. We're getting, you know, getting some more sponsors and getting some more opportunities and everything. And the other thing is we have the World Games coming every 4 years. It's like the next biggest thing to the Olympics. So the World Games is coming to Birmingham, Alabama, of all places. And it was supposed to be this year, but they moved it 1 year. So it'll be 2021. And we're going to have a big USA team World Games qualifier at the beginning of 2021. So, you know, our best are going to be taking on, you know, some of the heavy hitters from France, Thailand, Belarus, Russia. They're all going to be here in Birmingham, Alabama. So
where else would you have it?
Yeah. So that's
cool.
That right there, we can't have a selection committee for. We just got to have a fight. We got to have a way of just getting everybody in there, giving them enough notice. You know, if you give somebody a year notice about this tournament, I should think that, you know, the funds could be found to get to that.
Yeah. No, it's good. Kurt, you got anything else that you want to?
Yeah, kind of. Just the regular questions I like to ask a lot of the guys that are coaches or that have fought before. One of my first questions is just like, how do you, in yourself or in your students, like how do you manage like the anxiety, the fear before somebody competes?
I manage that through the training where we put them through some tough situations where I tell them that thing that, you know, you've made it through this camp, so you're ready for this fight. You know, if you went through this and I didn't pull you from the fight, that means you got my, you know, blessing that you're good for the fight. And if I say you're good for the fight, you're good for the fight. So that I hope can put some of their fear out. Though I think a lot of it is just in how you do the training. Like I put them in, if they're guys that are in their up and coming days, I'll put them with more of our experienced guys where they're going to have to learn how to lose in practice, which is you should lose in practice a lot. If you're not, you're at the wrong place. But, you know, we get to put them in tough situations. And I think that eliminates the fear, you know. We have a lot of really good people at our gym. So if they're up-and-comers going with them, I think it'll build their confidence, especially if they're telling them too, the experienced athletes as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, yeah. Let me see. The other thing, like, what loss or setback do you think you learned the most from?
Oh. I would say the glory fight that I had, the very first glory, or the reality show. Those both are like heavy things because it was such a big thing when I was on the Challenger Muay Thai, which is like the contender season 2, basically being eliminated on the first episode, going to Glory 1 and having a horrible fight. Like those are just like international exposure and you tanked it and lost. But recovering and coming back from that would be probably the biggest thing to take from the loss. Like, I tell, this is the thing about my experience that I can pass on to people. I was like, if I can go to that stage, get my ass whooped in front of all those people, go on the internet and read all the shit that people talk, and come back and still compete and win, then there's nothing that can, you know, keep you out of the continuing on and fighting, you know? Those were heavy. Those were embarrassing. They were the worst, but there was no way I was going to go out like that. No way. No, no, no.
And then last question, who's your favorite opponent? Like, who is the person that you most enjoyed fighting in your career? You think of somebody?
There's a couple, I would guess, with like different, even though I like fought earlier in the night, when I fought Matsua, I knew his clinch game was like next level. Like he beat John Wayne Parr with just his clinch. He beat a lot of big names, and he's got just super strong. And I'd already got a tough fight earlier in the night that I won, but I was hurt. And I went in there, and I was like, I wonder how he feels in the clinch. And I don't even felt like I got a hold of him, and I was already on my butt. I got thrown already. I was just like, man, this guy's clinch is like Jedi stuff, man. I didn't even touch him, and he threw me on the ground. And so, like, with clinching, I would say him. I always liked I fought him twice. I like Marco Piquet style because it's like a blend of Dutch kickboxing and Muay Thai, and I just like how he stands and he walks his opponents down and just stays strong through there. I don't know. I got to fight a lot of really good guys, but I say my favorite. Yeah, I would say that Marco probably, yeah, I like his style. Like when I came, when my student Becca fought on the Badahari and Rico Verhoeven fight in Amsterdam, we stopped by his gym and, you know, got to get some, you know, training with him because we're friends. And he got to pass on some stuff to my fighter there, the girl fighter that I brought there. So it was a cool experience, you know, how you just, in Muay Thai, keep friendships throughout everything. You fight each other. You can, you know,
that's really cool.
Go back and learn from. So go visit his gym. So it was cool.
I'll hand it over to you, Kelly.
All right. So we don't want to keep you too much longer. I ask some stupid questions that I ask everybody that have nothing to do with anything. Yeah. So first one that's super important is, do you believe in aliens?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some other life forms out there for sure.
Okay. So when you were in camp, like in your book, you have a bunch of like weight cutting, like disasters almost. Like there's a bunch of times in the book where you're like, I went to the scale, I'm over. It's like, damn. Yeah. You know, I competed a lot of jiu-jitsu and that was like the thing. I was like, I'm going to beat myself if I don't make weight.
Mm-hmm.
So during that, like, when you're going through that stuff, what is your cheat food that's like, when I'm done with this, I need to eat? Like, is there something that stands out for you when you're in, like, fight mode that you're, like, craving?
Oh, well, when I lived in Thailand, after every fight, we would go get, like, pizza or hamburgers because I was basically eating Thai food at the camp every, you know, all the meals. So, like, once the fight was over, I'd go binge on pizza or hamburgers or any kind of Western food.
Was your post weigh-in drink that you drink?
Picari Sweat or Picari Sweet. I don't know how you say it, but yeah, it's a Japanese like Gatorade. It's like a lemon lime. It's like a blue bottle. It's good. I drink obviously a bunch of water, then I would drink a couple of those, and yeah, those are good. I wish I could find them here in the U.S.
There's lots of things over there that it's like you miss once you're not there. And so you have your own gym that you're running. What is the playlist in the gym typically? Like, what kind of music is going on?
If it's me, it's a lot of hip hop. I've been doing like MF Doom since he passed away recently. I've been doing like a tribute to MF Doom for the last few weeks. I've been Jedi Mind Tricks, Wu-Tang Clan. I got like a lot of like a lot of the stuff that's like off branches Jedi Mind Tricks, like Army of the Pharaohs.
Yep. Vinnie Paz.
Vinnie Paz, all that stuff. Like, yeah. Mobb Deep. Yeah, okay. Different. Mostly hip hop. I have different like phases where I hit some. Maybe I'll put some Texas. We don't call it hip hop. It's just like Texas rap, like Houston rap. Then I'll put in some. So like I sometimes like listen to harder stuff when it's like me in the gym by myself with like a fighter. But if it's generally in the class, it's usually some hip hop. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. So I mean, other than that, I mean, you have an amazing story that you're coming out with in your book. When does the book release? The title, where we can grab that?
It is Stories of an American Nak Moy. I had to change it because I said the story of American Nak Moy. I was like, these are just pulled stories. There's not like, because you know what I mean? Like the story would mean like that's the story. These are all because I think that some like haters will come on there and say, well, what about this? You didn't put that in there. I'm like, well, these are just stories I put in there. Like, just thinking about it, I probably should have talked about the going to the crocodile fights, you know? In the book. Yeah. But it's just like stories from me. And it's supposed to come out February 2nd on Amazon. It'll be a digital, like the Kindle version, and then like you can get the hard copy version. It's just stories. It's like, it's just want people to know that you can, you know, you can go and do all this, experience all this in Muay Thai, and it'll help you with stuff outside of your Muay Thai. It'll help you in your personal life. You don't have to be a world champion. You know, everybody strives to be some, you know, obviously you want to strive to be a champion, but the reality is not everybody's going to be a champion. So this is what one of those books, this is what I want to tell my story, is that, you know, you can go and fight for titles and lose. You can go and compete and still be successful, if that makes sense. So I come back, open a gym. Now my fighters are world champions and better than me. So imagine what they're going to do when they open a gym. It's just going to keep, the cycle's going to get bigger and better, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, like I said, we read the book and it's very interesting of the stories. It's not, I became champion of this. It's the weight cuts, it's the training, it's how the trainers treat, there's so much more to it that a lot of times that if you were just, this is how I became Lumpini champion, it that gets missed in that. And so like, that was what was cool about reading your book, is like each one of the fights, each one of those little progresses, that is a whole nother story, and that's pretty cool. I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
And so we have to get that. What about the gym? Where's the gym?
Gym Heritage Muay Thai and Houston, Texas. We have primarily Muay Thai classes, but we also have MMA. And when I had MMA start recently, I was like, I'm real particular about it, you know? So I was like, a friend came by, and it was almost like, I have some of these things happen in my life. I'm like, all of a sudden, my friend brings in through the door Jose Pele Landy from, you know, back in the old shootbox days and all that stuff. And he's like, yeah, he just moved down here to Houston. He moved his family down here. He's looking to, you know, try. Oh, like what? I was like, this is like the ultimate stand-up guy that defeated all these, you know, jiu-jitsu guys. And you know, I was like, hey, right here, you put your style with the Muay Thai here, and
yeah, boom. Definitely.
So yeah, he started coming here. So it's like we have that. So we got Pele in the MMA, and we have myself with the Muay Thai, and there's so much experience in the gym. We have people that have moved here from other places, like the Lion Fight North American champion, Whitney McGrath. She's got a lot of experience in Australia, New Zealand, Thailand. We have a lot of just people here that are going to give up-and-comers an experience, males and females. So it's a great place if you're looking to get started in your Muay Thai journey, for sure.
Nice, very good. And then the federation, how do we, what do they need to look at, or like United a general direction that they can start?
United States Muay Thai Federation, and go to usamuaythai.sport. You can, I think it's the best place to get education as far as rules, and you can, there's a pathway. There's everything that we do, there's a path. So if you want to be an official, there's a path to being an official. There's a path where we've actually taken people to the world championships to get educated, you know, by the best at a world championship. We have, you know, athletes, coaches. There's USA Muay Thai memorabilia gear all on the website. So we're still growing. The sport is still growing. We need, obviously need help. If you want to help volunteer, please hit the website and let us know. We'd love to have some more help. Whatever your strong point is, come on in.
Awesome. Anything else you need to shout out or promote or anything like that? What else you got? Seem to be hustling, so.
Yeah, I just, I hope that after this COVID thing, I just hope that some of these U.S. promotions, the tournaments in the USA, I hope everybody can get back on their feet in 2021, because it's been a rough year for a lot of athletes. You know, this it's going to come up soon on a year and a half of some people not competing, and a lot of people's careers might be, you know, done with from this. So I hope that it can get back on its feet soon and give these people opportunity to compete. And when this stuff, when we don't have something to look forward to, a lot of people get down, you know? So I hope that some of these, I'm putting all political differences aside. I just want all the, because all the organizations don't get along with everybody, but let's just all try to help each other get these shows back up and running, support anything Muay Thai. And that's what I got to say, just support everybody. Let's get it back up. Let's build back up, and hopefully some more fights in 2021.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. All right, Michael, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We truly appreciate it. It's been
thank
great.
You guys.
Definitely check out the book. The book was good. So
we'll thank you. February 2nd.
February 2nd. We'll make sure we have links on everything when we put the episode out too. So I'll hit you up off the show, and we'll set everything up. All right.
Thank you so much, man.
I'll talk to you later.
Thank you once again for listening to the number one combat sports podcast, the Fight Chase Muay Thai and MMA podcast. You can follow us on Fight Chase on all the social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. And also, don't forget you can support us at any time going to the anchor.fm/fightchase. Hit the support icon and you can support us for as little as 99 cents a month. We truly appreciate it. Thank you for listening. And Kurt, don't say boom.
Boom.
Oh, it's a big kibosh! Locks out moisture, seals in freshness. Good.